Hello and welcome to Glitch Cube, we're a gaming podcast, and each week we take a deeper look into the art of video games. As always, I'm Christian.
And I'm Chris.
And welcome back, everybody. Thank you guys so much for joining us once again as we dive further into the world of games. So, we have been playing this quite a bit now. It's a perfect game to play in between or, you know, the pickup and plays or whatever. Like, this game is, in my opinion, kind of amazing. It's fun. It's crazy addicting. And it is slightly controversial as well because of some rating changes and all that stuff and some connections to potential gambling or getting kids into the idea of gambling, which we'll have more opinions on that later in the episode. But if you guys have not guessed it yet, we are talking about Balatro. I mean, everyone is talking about this game right now, and it holds up to the hype. You know, in my opinion, at least, I think this title is fantastic. I absolutely loved playing poker when I was younger. So when you were the one to bring it up to me, and when I first saw it, I was like, yeah, I'm sold. First of all, card game, yes, please. Second of all, poker rules, rad. And then now it's a roguelike too. Like, there's a lot to dive into this game, and there's a lot under the hood, right? Like, there's a lot of things that are kind of hidden there, which is really fun, and especially whenever you played it, or like if you were playing it early, you were seeing people unravel and find the new jokers and the new like hidden cards and things like that, and the synergies and everything. So it was just like a fun ride to try and figure things out and just play with the systems. And I think that's one of the great aspects of this game, is it doesn't really hurt you for doing that. For exploring those systems, the runs are very quick. Everything is really fast, but yeah. We're going to dive into Balatro today, but, you know, obviously that's my first impressions of it. I really enjoy the title, but we'll dive more into the mechanics and stuff. What's your first thoughts of Balatro itself?
Oh, I love it. It's funny because I was never that big of a poker guy. I think the extent of my poker playing was Poker Night at the Inventory, which is that like really old Valve game where you're playing like random characters and they're all joking. And it's like, I don't know why, but I was very, very into that game because it was just funny. And but other than that, I don't know why. Poker just never, I think because I could never remember the hands perfectly well in a quick manner. And then something I love about this game is I can always pull it up right there and be like, oh, yeah, that's what a flush is. Oh, yeah, that's what a straight is. Like, it's easy. You know, like, for me, my big thing was always solitaire. So, like, any kind of solitaire game I could play, aside from the Microsoft one, I was on it. Dude, Fairy Solitaire, yes. Regency Solitaire, yes. But Blanche was cool because it's, you know, when I saw it, I was like, yeah, I knew you're going to love it because it's basically cards and roguelike. Like, perfect combination right there. And me,
it's just missing cats, and then it would be like heaven. I never stop playing this game. So
I'm really surprised there's not a cat in there, you know? But
I haven't unlocked all the jokers. I've unlocked a lot of them, but there might be a cat joker. Who knows?
You never know. But yeah, and I was like, oh, I think I reached a point one time where I was very burnt out on card roguelike games, and this is probably the first one I've played in a very long time, and I'm happy with it. You know, it's cool, it's addicting. I feel like the last time I got into a game that was somewhat like this, that was also kind of a roguelike deck builder, was Luck Be a Landlord, which is kind of the same thing, but it's slot machines instead of poker. And that's also a very interesting game, kind of in the same way, but I feel not as polished as Balatro, because, man, you feel like you see enough, and then you get far enough, and you start seeing these crazy jokers, and you're like, oh my god, I want to keep playing, because I want to see more. And it's just like, it's endless. This game is crazy.
the fact that there's 150 Jokers alone and it feels balanced is insane. Like, there's so many variables that go into this game between the Joker cards, the tarot cards, the wilds, the steel, the different types, all that thing, right? Like, there's a lot that really plays into this, and it's kind of amazing that all of it seems to go pretty cohesively. That's what really fascinated me about it. And for those of you who don't know what Bolotro is, I mean, watch a video, right? It's pretty easy, but it's basically like poker on steroids. So the way it works is you get a large hand. It's much larger than your standard, whether you're playing Texas Hold'em or regular five card stud or something like that. And you just try and combine cards into common poker, like winning hands. You got your pair, two pair, flush, straight, royal flush, all that good stuff. But while you're playing it, you can then manipulate the deck itself, or you can get multipliers from jokers that will then, you know, give you more points, which is necessary to continue moving on in the game itself. After each round that you win, you can go to the shop. You can pick up new Joker cards, or you can pick up booster packs, which might be random cards or something like that, random planet cards or whatever it may be. Or you can pick up like little trinkets and things to kind of help you along on the run as you go along. Now, like, that's the basic premise of it, but you said something interesting a little bit ago. Like, the sheer amount of polish is what really stood out to me with this title. For how simple or simplistic it seems, this game is incredibly complex, incredibly dense, and the polish on it is phenomenal. From the sound effects, the music, the card designs, the just overall flow of the game, it's very easy to just pick up, play, go through a run, and then just continue that cycle over and over again. I feel like a lot of roguelikes can get a little clunky in the in-between times between runs, and Bolotro doesn't have that. It's very streamlined, where you can just go do a run, ran, and then move on and do another one really quickly. And it still kind of feels like you're playing the same run, even though, you know, completely new hand, you didn't win the last one, whatever it may be. And I think the big thing about that is, especially in the early game, you're unlocking new cards by purchasing them throughout this entirety of it, right? And that's what really makes it fun, and it forces the player to really get creative with the hands that they're playing. Whenever I see a new Joker card pop up that says undiscovered, even if I was going for a different type of synergy, something that I knew I was able to be successful with in the past, I always bought the undiscovered because I just wanted to see how it played. I wanted to see it in just in action, right? And I think that was really phenomenal. And the reward system that's built into this is pretty great. You feel really good whenever you get a really good hand, especially whenever you start seeing the fire show up over your score. I think that's great. I mean, that happens whenever you play one single hand that is going to give you or more points than what is currently being requested of you for that round, which is really cool. It just feels good to be able to see that and see all the multipliers tick through. Like, this really scratches an itch for people, and like for me specifically, and I'm sure a lot of people out there. I mean, obviously a lot of people, because people are putting tons of hours into this, but it really makes, it's almost like pulling that slot machine and watching those things go, right? Like, you just want to keep going and keep playing this thing and just keep learning and exploring and figuring all this stuff out. And right now I'm just on a mission to find as many undiscovered things as I possibly can. I want to unlock all of it. Like, I bought all the packs. I've gotten all the tarot cards. I'm missing 3 world cards. I have more than half the jokers, right? Like, I just want to keep going with that aspect. I don't care if I win a round. This is the first roguelike I've played where I could care less if I actually win a round. I know that unlocks different things and stuff like that, but like, it's weird, right? Like, I don't know if you feel the same way, but like, when I lose, it's just like, oh, okay, that was fun. Like, maybe I'll try something different. I don't know. Maybe I'm weird with that one, but I don't know how you feel about that.
I started getting like that. When I was the first couple rounds I did, I would just try to go as far as I can, right? I'd play optimally where I'm like, okay, I'm going to use this crazy multiplier for flushes. and I'm going to use this crazy multiplier for like hearts. And then I'm going to start using tarot cards to change cards into hearts. That way I can try and get all of these multipliers together, which is great, but I wouldn't go for the cards that were undiscovered that wouldn't benefit me, which was cool because I was able to get really far. But the thing with this game is that it's like you were saying, like it's more about unlocking because, yeah, you can get really far, but if you don't beat anything or you don't unlock anything along the way, like you're not really doing anything other than getting really far and then losing it. So I've been starting to just do runs where I'm like, I'm just going to start picking anything that's undiscovered, even if it's like not that great of a card.
Right.
Because usually you can kind of skip by for the first two or three like antes before like, oh, the multipliers like are really necessary, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm trying to do because I definitely have barely unlocked any jokers because I always kind of get settled in with the same type and just leave it at that.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite joker yet or one whenever you see it, you're like, oh, I got to grab that one. I don't care. Because I already
anytime
do.
Anytime it's one that's like, I think it's like, what, times 10 multiplier or something high like that when you have a certain hand, I usually will always pick that one and then I'll build around it. Or one that multiplies with a certain suit.
Mm, yeah, those ones are great.
I haven't tried the crazy ones.
My favorite card, my favorite joker for sure. I mean, it throws a huge random wrench in the entire game, but it's Misprint. Misprint is one of my favorite jokers. Like it could do times zero, which is like, oh, well, that sucks. But it could also do like times 20 or times 15. It's random every single time. Because it's a Misprint. And I love the design of that card too. Like you can tell that it slid off to the side, right? And it didn't print correctly or something like that, right? Like it just looks really, really cool. And I like that randomness. And I've gotten actually really lucky with it. It feels like you don't really get as punished with it as you think you might, especially with it being so random. But no, it's a great like card to pick up. I would definitely recommend if you haven't played with Misprint yet. So, yeah, next time you see that, pick that one up right away and just kind of have fun with it. Just let it go.
I don't think I've seen that one.
It's a good one. I mean, obviously, there's that. There's the banana, which is fantastic. I mean, it gives you a huge multiplier, but it has a chance of, you know, being destroyed after every round and everything. Apparently, there's like a legendary banana as well that doesn't have the destroyed function. So it's just like a crap ton multiplier. So there's a lot to this, and some people are finding some amazing synergies with the jokers. Like, I feel like that is the essential like part of this game is playing with those jokers and figuring things out that way. But yeah, it's a blast.
That's what I got going on right now. Like I have those two where one is based off of a suit and one is based off of a hand. And then I just got one that's like, it does it off of like odd numbers.
Oh, yeah, those are
so
great.
And then there's one other one I have where it increases the chips. And I've also been upgrading my cards. So basically, you know, I have like one, I think it's stone, where it's just a flat 50 coins. And it's foil, so it adds an extra 30. So I'm getting 80 coins from that, or chips. And it's just like that mixed with those multipliers. It's like basically if I do the right hand, I can almost always get like, I don't know, like 8K, like easy.
Nice. Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, yeah, I remember I had one run that was pretty amazing where I got to upgrade my cards quite a bit. And then I got a like duplicator card. It was a duplicator joker. So if I had played one card in my hand as like the first hand, then it would duplicate that one. So I was duplicating face cards like crazy. And then I found a joker that was like, I think it's called like face up or something like that, or face off. Every face card that you put out gave you a times 10 multiplier. So just like unloading face cards like crazy and just going nuts with them. So that was a lot of fun, just like finding those little synergies there too. Or maybe it was like adding a bunch of chips. I think it was like 50 chips or something. I can't remember. But it was getting me like quite a bit of like a big score right off the bat. And it was fun just kind of like playing around with that one for a little bit. So yeah, it's crazy what you can do. The possibilities seem damn near endless with this because of how many different cards are. I mean, there's 150 different Jokers to find. Like, that's insane, right? And then there's 15 different decks that you can play with, and each deck has a different ability. There's different vouchers you can use, tarot cards, planet cards, spectral cards. You can enhance your cards. There's seals like with the blinds and different things to affect your rounds. There's different editions of cards, right? So like normal, foil, holographic, things like that. All the booster packs, the tags that you can pick up for skipping blinds, and even the blinds themselves, right? Like, there's so much to dive into this with this game. And I can see the addiction level of this, right? And that addiction level has actually become kind of a controversial thing for this game itself. Shortly after its release, it actually went through a change in rating because of the quote-unquote gambling aspect of this game, which I mean, what gambling aspect really, right? And it led it to being pulled from like the Nintendo eShop for a day. Like, as soon as it got put on, it got pulled out for one day, and then they put it back on there. It got pulled from different countries. Like, people start freaking out about that because it could, you know, quote unquote, like, make kids want to gamble. But I don't see it. And it's just so insane to me. And I mean, yeah, there's studies out there, but those studies are for things like loot boxes and stuff like that. This game doesn't ask you for microtransactions. It just asks you to explore, have fun, and play. And so it kind of blows my mind that this is exactly where it went, but it's just because it's using poker concepts. I mean, you're not going to learn how to play poker by playing Balatro. I'm sorry. Like, that's just not going to happen. So it kind of blows my mind that this is such a controversial thing. I don't get it. I mean, what?
It's weird that they call it gambling, but you're not actually winning anything from it. Because it's like, these kind of games have always existed, right? I mean, you go back to the NES and there was Mahjong and, like, poker there too. Like, I think maybe they're like, oh, the numbers go up a lot faster and a lot higher, but it's like, it's not any different than other, you know, games that have existed before this. And I mean, maybe when they put the initial rating out, like, I think even back then, those old poker games and stuff, they were always rated teen. I would think so, because that's kind of what this got moved to, right? They moved it to a teen rating, or did they move it to...
I thought it got pushed to mature. No?
Really? That's a good question. Because I think when it came out, it was rated E10.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, it got changed to 18+.
It was 3+, but it's since changed to 18+.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Jesus.
That's a big jump for... And you can, I guarantee they didn't do actual research behind that to vouch for that decision. Like, 18 plus is insane for this game. I mean, it's just like any other game that has a score system attached to it. It's just like playing Mario, right? Like, you're watching the score go up through the actions of performing the game itself. That's all this is. It's just like any other game that you would play out there. So that's nuts. That's such a harsh rating for Balatro.
Yeah, because I'm literally looking at, like, this, like, casino games for the PlayStation 1 that I have, and it's freaking teen. I'm like, why is this game, like, basically M-rated? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that just... make really quick, rash decisions. I mean, there's an article in The Guardian that in 2021, even, like, I mean, they've been talking about gambling in games for quite a while, especially with like the loot box scare and stuff like that. But they did 13 separate studies, behavior studies, on into specifically loot boxes in games. And all studies except for one supposedly showed that it does boost or make people more inclined to want to gamble outside of gaming as well. It's kind of, I don't know. I feel like even without those games, the people that want to gamble are going to gamble. I don't understand why now the games are starting to get really hit with this and really targeted. It doesn't really feel fair. You can make the argument for games like loot box games, but something like this that's just a simple roguelike with some poker mechanics, not even like legitimate poker mechanics. I mean, I had a hand size of like 14 at one point because of the jokers that I had. You're not going to play a poker game where you have 14 joker or 14 cards in your hand, right? Like that just doesn't exist. And you're not getting real money. You're not spending real money to get new jokers or unlocks or things like that, random things. It's all in-game contained and using in-game currency. I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out why they did this or where is this scare actually coming from? And I'm coming up short. I don't know. Like, can you fathom a reason why they would attack a game like Balatro this hard?
I think because maybe the emphasis is trying to get a bunch of money, but and because it actually plays a part, right? So in order to unlock anything, you do need to make money. But the thing is, it's like, at the end of the day, it's still not, you know, real money. Whereas like a loot box, it makes sense, right? A game like, I mean, obviously Counter-Strike is violent, so it makes sense it would be rated higher. But if it was just the loot boxes that you could then sell on the marketplace, that makes sense. But you'd have to be an adult because loot boxes are gambling. And it is weird that they targeted this game of all things, because I feel like over the past few years, we've seen games that are basically the same thing, right? Like, there's no way you can make actual hard-earned money off of it, but they have the same kind of, you know, numbers go up, multipliers go up, stuff like that, and they don't get hit with it. I think maybe because it was just marketed as a poker game and doesn't have, like, a crazy spin on it, these people doing the ratings were like, this is a poker game, like this needs to be rated higher. Whereas like, imagine if there was maybe a knight or something, like imagine if it was like half Slay the Spire or something, where it's like you're battling like mythical creature, even though it's still poker, but you're fighting like an avatar or something, then they probably could be like, oh, this is more cartoonish. But if it's literally just cards on your screen and numbers and money, I guess I could see that, but it's such a stretch. You know, it's basically people looking at it like, oh, poker, nothing else? Okay, rating up. Like, not even looking at it, not even vetting it. Like, I think that's what it is, you know? I mean, there's a lot of other things in the industry that, you know, these people that don't play the games will just say something about it and will actually hurt the games, even if that's not their intention. But in a lot of ways, it is a bummer, because I feel like these people that don't normally play games or don't know what they're looking for with this will just speak their mind without actually doing research. And, you know, this could ruin a developer, right? Mm-hmm. Like, luckily, this game made a lot of money because it got really popular. But imagine if this was a smaller developer who maybe did it all themselves and put it out there, and this delisting, like, because that's such a jump for 18 plus, it's like, that could really screw you, especially with the eShop. You know, Nintendo is so rigorous with their rating, because I think if a game is 18 plus, it doesn't get put on the home screen of the eShop anymore, if I remember right.
Yeah, and this was,
I don't remember, on the home, there's a lot of junk on the eShop.
First got on the eShop, so.
Yeah, it's, and that's the problem with these rating boostings, is that, you know, the biggest thing is that it takes it off the front page, of a storefront if it's, you know, Nintendo. But also, a lot of times these happen when a game gets, like, delisted and relisted, you know, say on Steam, usually those, all the reviews get lost and all these other things get lost. And people might not realize, like, oh, that's not a big deal. But think about this, right? Say a game was overwhelmingly positive, but gets pulled and comes back. Now it's sitting at just positive. Mm-hmm. And there's a good chunk of people out there that will only buy games that have a, you know, something over moderately positive. So it's like a lot of ways this can hurt developers and stuff like that. So it is kind of a bummer that it happens, but luckily, like, it seems like they recovered pretty quickly. Because it the issue seemed like it got solved within like a day or two.
Yeah, and, it was a very quick response. So that is good. And I'm just thinking for like the indie developers, the small time people that don't have money for marketing, and the fact that this got pulled, right? Like, can you imagine a game that might not have gotten as much traction as Balatro did? This definitely would have killed that game company if this was like their first project or something like that, to get pulled from the shop completely, because they don't have the extra resources to then put it back out there. I mean, I think luckily for Balatro, the controversy ended up helping them a little bit. It put it out there in the limelight a little bit more. It made it more mainstream. But that's a special case. That's not going to be this case for everybody. And for most people, it's going to hurt more than it helps, especially for smaller companies out there, which is unfortunate. Now, my big thing, and I just want to throw this out there as like a one of my last thoughts, right? Like, so this game got dinged for being gambling, and that's why it got pushed to 18 and up, right? So Why is Madden 8 and up? Why is Madden still rated E for everyone when people gamble on Madden games? They do like CPU versus CPU. There's like live streams of this stuff. They recreate Super Bowls, right? Like, they spend money on this stuff. Like, that's gambling. They did that in FIFA too. So why are those games not getting hit for this when it's like, I get it, it's a sports game, but poker is also technically a sport, right? Like, there's a World Series, there's all that stuff. It's more of a mental sports, like on the level of a chess or something like that, but it is the same thing. So why is Madden not getting hurt for this stuff when something like Balatro is? I mean, obviously the gambling is a side effect and it's not a part of the game in Madden or these sports games, but like, that is out there. That's real. That's happening. And that's real money. Whereas Balatro, you're not making real money off of this thing. So it's kind of crazy that those two don't correlate.
I think it's disclaimers. I remember, and granted, I haven't played a sports game in a very long time. But they used to always be this warning that would be like, online interactions are not counted in the rating, or ERSB, whatever. And I think like there's some kind of disclaimer when it comes to like those, I don't know what the hell they're called, fantasy packs or whatever. I think there is a disclaimer where it's like, you need to be of this age in order to buy any packs or anything like that. But I mean, kids are just going to take whatever credit cards attached to their profile and just buy packs anyway. But yeah,
I think that's what it is. Monitoring it. So, yeah.
And I think when you look at all these like EA sports games, because that's primarily what they are, it's kind of a loophole. Right? Because sports are safe. Anybody can play it, any age. But then you just slip in a little microtransaction, especially something as like bad as like FIFA or Madden, where there's just like a lot of money gets dumped into those games. Like, it's dangerous. And I never really understood what you're doing with those packs, because I just don't play those games. So I'm like, why are people spending hundreds of dollars? But yeah, it's crazy because, yeah, there's pretty much esports for at least FIFA. Like, I know there's competitions for people playing FIFA, which is It boggles my mind, but at the same time, I understand it because it is a sport game. So people should be able to play that as a sport as well. But it is still weird that those games have been, I think they're just starting to finally get some kind of like pushback from places, right? Like over the past few years, certain countries have made them change their ways, right? We saw that with Overwatch, where I think in like Belgium or something, they got rid of loot. Not, I don't think they got rid of the loot boxes, but they told you the probability of what you would get. And I think as time That's goes nice. On, we're going to start seeing game. That. Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, that's the one thing I liked about, you know, a Team Fortress 2 or Counter-Strike, like Valve-based loot box, is that when you click on it, it'll tell you all the possible things you can get in that box with like a color rating of like, oh, this is probably the percentage of the chance you'll get in it. But yeah, it's like, I don't think loot boxes will ever go away. You know, I think in a lot of ways, like, we're at a point where gambling is just kind of bred into a lot of games. And I think in Bellatro's case, because it is a game based off of what is usually for gambling, it just got that, you know, blunt end of the stick when it shouldn't have. But sadly, you know, people will just see what it is and age it rather than actually deciphering what it is.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for us this week. Hope you guys have enjoyed this little conversation into Bellatro itself and gambling in games. But yeah, go out and play Bellatro. It's great. It's fun. Yes, it is incredibly addicting, but who cares? Go play this game. It's fantastic. You'll have a lot of fun with it. Trust me. It's very quick and all that good stuff. But yeah. Anyway, we'll talk to you guys next week with more games and all that good stuff, everything that we find. But until then, bye for now.